Accession number 31392, Rail 1.
Bill Riggs, Rail 1. Bill, can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Yes, I was born on 5th of May, but I was born in the Midlands, but that was mainly because my father met my mother in the First World War in France, and they moved over to England, and that's where he was able to get a job.
Was your mother French?
My mother was French, yes, and she was in France, and my father was a sergeant major in the Royal Engineers in France, and that's how they met. And they married over there. My sister was born over there, but I was born in England when they came over. And then afterwards, for some reason, I think it's because he worked of his work, we all went back to France again, and I stayed in France till I was about 6 years old.
You mentioned the date of your birth. What year was it?
1922.
So what did your father do for a living?
He was a locomotive driver, and that's what he did when he worked in the Midlands, and he drove a little engine in a quarry, and of course I was very proud of that. It's one of my early childhood memories, and that's my father driving that engine. And then later on he worked as a blacksmith in the Hackney Power Station in London.
So you came back to London from France, is that where you...
Eventually, yes, that's where we settled. And so we lived in East London and North London. And then my father died just before the war, and we all moved to a house in Chingford in North London, in Epping Forest.
Can I ask you about your early education?
Yes, I did infant school in Rouen in France, and that's where I got my grounding for French. I can still talk French quite fluently. It's just still in the back of my mind. And then I went to usual elementary school, and I won a scholarship to the Hackney Downs a secondary school in North London, where I matriculated at the age of 16. The war was looming then, and the only prospect in most of our minds, people of my age, were that we were going to be called up.
How much had you anticipated that there was going to be a war?
Oh, I don't think there was any doubt. It was all obviously on the cards. As a matter of fact, I would have been disappointed if there hadn't been, because even though I was only a schoolboy, it was quite obvious that something had to be done about Hitler, and I couldn't see any other prospect.
What were your feelings at the sort of time of Munich in 1938?
I was rather disgusted and disappointed. With hindsight, we probably weren't ready to fight a war, and that was probably the reason. But I was a bit ashamed, really.
And what about preparations for war prior to 1939? Had you been issued with gas masks and that sort
of thing? Oh yes, gas masks. And when I was at school, quite a year or two before the war, we did a practice evacuation. One day lots of double-decker buses arrived at the school. We all got on them, and we didn't go anywhere. We all came off again. It was just a practice, and to give us some idea of what would happen if a war started. But I left school before the war started, so it didn't happen to me.
So when did you leave school, and what did you go to do?
Well, I passed an examination for the London County Council as a clerk, and it was really only to spend the time and earn a bit of money until I was called up, because my older friends were being called up, and it was obvious that that was the only prospect in view from my point of view.
So have you made any memories of the declaration of war at all?
Oh yes, very much so. I was living in Hackney in London, and I used to pumped the local organ, which was a hand-pumped organ. And on the day war was declared, I was actually pumping the organ at the school, at the church, and all of a sudden the music stopped and I couldn't and everything went quiet, and we had big heavy curtains, and I looked through the curtain and the church was absolutely empty because the air raid warning had gone off. I couldn't hear it behind the organ loft, and the priest said, evacuate the church, everybody outside, they forgot about me.
Did you expect there to be German Air Force raids?
Oh yes, certainly. Certainly, we thought that it would come quite quickly.
So, have you any memories of that early period of the war, the kind of phony war period, when very little was happening?
Yes, we couldn't really understand that, because we thought if a war had been declared, everybody would start fighting. So, really, we were rather puzzled.
And what about the kind of restrictions that came into place with the war starting?
There weren't many restrictions at first, except for the blackout. We had to there was an enormous amount of black cloth for sale. I must say that, in spite of what everybody was saying, we must have been very well prepared, because all these things were ready. Gas masks, blackout materials, anti-aircraft guns, these air raid shelters. So we were prepared.
And in your job, did you have any kind of war role?
Yes. Our secondary role would have been to man the rest centres for the bombed out Londoners. And so to do that, we spent the evening, the nights and weekends at the office. We took it in rota, of course, so each of us only had to do maybe two or three standbys a month.
And how would they have been organised, the rest centres?
A lot of the schools in the East End were evacuated, so they were empty. And so they had been stocked with food, blankets, emergency bedding, etc., and cooking materials. And it was all ready there for use if the bombing had started and bombed-out people were starting to arrive.
And the ones that you were in, what kind of capacity would they take? Would there be a limit on the number of people they could really...
Well, there were quite big schools. I suppose they could have taken 100, 150, but of course they wouldn't have stayed there for long. They would only have stayed there until temporary accommodation would have been found for them, proper accommodation.
And were you doing that from the outbreak of war?
Yes, absolutely. But of course, until the bombing started, which was later in 1940, we weren't required. We just spent our time in the office overnight playing cards and reading. It was quite enjoyable, really, and of course we got extra pay for it, which was quite welcome.
So, as the war kind of progressed, there was the obviously Dunkirk. Were you aware of the situation at the time of Dunkirk?
Oh yes, we were extremely concerned, because we could see that the war was hotting up, and it was quite possible that we would see action. But I don't remember really ever having thoughts of defeat. There was very little atmosphere of defeat. We knew that we were in a sticky spot, but we didn't think that we would come out worst.
And with the fall of France, the Home Guard was formed, or the local defence volunteers.
Yes.
Were you a member of that?
No, because I was already busy with this rest centre service.
What about when the bombing started?
Yes, when the bombing started, of course, we were called out to man our first rest centre. which was quite interesting. And all of a sudden, I had to drop my usual clerical job, and I was doing 12 hours on, 12 hours off for about 6 weeks.
Where was the residence that you were dealing with?
In Globe Road, which was in Bethnal Green.
Can you give me a little bit more detail of what happened, obviously, with the bombing, how it worked, and how, you know, any experiences that you had at that time?
Yeah, several of us were sent to the Globe Road School and told to man it. And we'd been given instructions on exactly what to do, and when we got there, it was like an Aladdin's cave. There were, by that time, rationing had started, and so when we saw sugar by the sack, tea by the chest, blankets up to the ceiling, and we thought to myself, my God, they were prepared. And so as the sad EastEnders came drifting in with just a few belongings over their shoulders, they were very pleased to see us, and we were very glad to help them. And they even had a hot meal every day, because we used to count the numbers, say there were 40, 50. We used to ring, telephone Cadby Hall, Joe Lyons and Company, the famous caterers, and we'd say, we've got 50 people at Globe Road School, and they would send an insulated van with the required number of hot meals. And things work very, very well indeed.
And with that, how did you actually issue the kind of tea and sugar and provisions to people, or would that be provided for them?
No, we were providing all the services in the school there. Handing out what was needed, making tea, sorting out the meals, and helping people to bed down. And the EastEnders, being such a cheerful lot, they didn't need much cheering up anyway. They would make their own amusement, and it was absolutely marvellous. Well, you hear these stories about the East End Cockney spirit, and there's no doubt that they had it in spades. They had it in numbers.
And how bad was the bombing in Hackney?
Pretty bad, because we weren't all that far from the docks and Liverpool Street Station and important areas of the city. And it was pretty near the main targets.
What about provision of air raid shelters? Were there...
They were mostly in that area. There were what they called the street shelters. There were brick shelters with reinforced concrete roofs at the side of the roads. They stayed there for a long time after the war, because they were so well built. They took a lot of knocking down.
And any incidents that spring to mind during that period of the bombing?
No, we didn't get any near misses. We did very, very well. As a matter of fact, the story of my life, really. The enemy never seemed to aim at me.
So after this period of quite intense bombing, did things settle down a little bit then, or was it continuous?
Well, for some reason, we were taken off the rest centre duties. Other people took over, but maybe the other job I was supposed to be doing was neglected, so they took me off that. And having been relieved of the rest centre duties, I then joined the Home Guard in my local area, which was Chingford, which was about 7 or 8 miles away.
How did you go about joining the Home Guard?
I just went to the local Home Guard centre and just put my name down, and they immediately accepted me. And within, I think, 3 days, I went to my first meeting. And then we started training. We did training one or two evenings a week, on Sundays regularly. I don't remember ever a Sunday when I didn't go on manoeuvres with them, in long route marches.
So what was the weekly training? What did that involve?
Learning how to use it, because we issued with a rifle and 10 rounds of ammunition, and we had to be told how to use them. And I must tell you this story about, we were in this small hut and crowded all together, and the ex World War One sergeant, who was the only one who really knew anything, was telling us how to load and unload our rifles. And the first thing he said was that he didn't have any blanks, and so we'd have to use our live rounds and keep your so-and-so fingers off the trigger. And needless to say, the gormless man behind me did let off a round just behind my head and made a little hole in the ceiling.
Were you issued with uniforms?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yes, we had to have uniforms, otherwise we wouldn't have been recognised as soldiers if we'd been captured.
And what unit were you with the Home Guard?
I don't remember the name of the unit. It was, it must have been the Chingford section of the Home. We had responsibility for manning the London Outer Defence Line, and we used to have to march about 3 or 4 miles every Sunday, and we had a pillbox just this side of Epping, and there was a ring of pillboxes all around London, and we were manning one of these pillboxes.
What defences were around the pillbox?
Not much. And there were holes in the road leading to the pillboxes, and you could take the wooden plugs out of the holes and stick steel stanchions, which were supposed to stop the tanks.
And did you have any heavier weapons and rifles at that time?
We had a Browning machine gun, but as it was American, we never had any ammunition for it. But we worked on the principle that if the Germans came along and pointed a machine gun at them, they would surrender.
And was that what you would do on a Sunday? Is that what you would do? You would go and man the pillbox on Sunday?
Yes, yes. We would report about 9:30 on a Sunday morning, march about 3 miles to our pillbox, mill around, do a few so-called manoeuvres, and then retire to the local pub.
What were the so-called manoeuvres? What would you do?
Just work out fields of fire, see that everything was in order. Not much, really.
And you mentioned the First World War sergeant instructing you on the rifle. And a lot of people have seen Dad's Army. What were your impressions of the Home Guard? Were they like Dad's Army, or were they not?
Yes and no. Part of it was very much like Dad's Army, because it was very amateurish, and there was a very few... It was a very small core of people who really knew what they were doing. But I think that we had the spirit.
Did you do drill with them as well?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yes, they tried to make us into real soldiers. That was very useful, actually, when we joined up, because we knew our drill already. And I must say that the school I went to, which used to be the livery company school, which was taken over by the London County Council, we had a school battalion, and we'd already been doing drilling for a number of years. We had dummy rifles at the back of the classroom, and several times a year the alarm bells went, and we used to rush out to the parade ground and do our drill. The prefects became the NCOs, and the masters became the officers, and the school band was summoned, and we used to march around the local park. That was way back. That stemmed from the Napoleonic Wars and had never stopped.
When did you join the Home Guard,
roughly? In late 1940, after my stint at the rest centre service finished.
And did you stay with them until you joined up?
Until I joined up, yes.
What was your job then, your actual employment as a clerk? What were you doing at that time?
Well, it was to do with recovery of expenses. In those days, there wasn't a National Health Service, and if people went into hospital, they were assessed as to their ability to pay. And we used to have to collect the money, and if people were in hospital and they were pensioners, we used to take their pension book and cash their pensions and then give them back a certain amount of pocket money. And my job was to go around the hospitals doing that.
Was that made more difficult by wartime conditions?
No, easier in a way, because many of the hospitals were evacuated. They kept the hospital as empty as possible. And so, actually, my work was much less than it used to be. I didn't tell them, and I was able to skive a bit, spin out the work, and maybe take a nurse out.
So at this point, obviously, you're getting to the sort of age when you're likely to be called up. What were your thoughts on that, and what did you want to do?
Oh, I was really looking forward to it. And I was determined I was going to try and join the Fleet Air Arm.
Why was that?
Well, I wanted to fly, and I'd always had a hankering for the Navy, so I was able to combine the two ambitions.
How did you go about doing that?
I went to the Admiralty in Trafalgar Square, and put my name down, joined up. They accepted me very, very quickly. And in a few days, I was given an interview and a medical examination. And everything went, I think everything was done inside 2 weeks. I even got a day's pay as well. But then of course, I was put on the waiting list and told to wait until I was, until there was a vacancy on an observer's course.
Now, two things there. Had you, when you volunteered, what was the interview like? And had you volunteered as an observer?
Oh, yes. I'd volunteered as pilot or observer, aircrew, and really, so many people wanted to be pilots. That they only accepted a certain number of pilots, and then they said, right, you're accepted as an observer. In the particular day I went, I've got from my 1941 diary. Training cards. I know. No, I haven't got it down here, I don't think. Anyway, I was interviewed in a room near the Admiralty, and there were some high-ranking officers there. They just asked me a few questions, most of which I wasn't able to answer.
What type of questions were they?
About my knowledge of ships, and I think mainly they were interested in my standards of education, mathematics, geometry and all that sort of thing, which was relevant to navigation. And so I think they were satisfied. I don't think they expected me to know very much at that stage. They were really assessing me visually.
And the medical, what did that entail at that stage?
Well, of course, in those days, they wanted to pass everybody they could, so it wasn't all that strict. But so long as your heart was all right, and you had all your limbs, and you appeared to be reasonably fit, they didn't want to turn you down.
So after this period, was there a period of deferment that occurred?
Yes, it was about 5 months before a vacancy was found on a course, and then I was quite suddenly called up. I was given a few days' notice. Just after Christmas 1941, I was told to report to the Royal Naval Air Station at Leon Solent.
How did you get there?
By train. They always gave you a rail warrant when you had to go anywhere in the services. You got a railway warrant.
And what happened when you arrived? What kind of reception did you have?
Well, I was in a group of about 60 or 70 similar aged boys to me. I call them boys because some of us were only barely 18. I was 19, and hardly any of them were over 20. And everybody was at a loss, didn't know what to do. And we had great fun trying to put on these strange sailors' uniforms.
So what was the sailor's uniform that you were issued with?
An ordinary sailor suit with bell-bottom trousers, blue square collar, fiddling little things like the black silk. There's a black silk that fits under your collar, and it's got to be folded. It's about 8 inches wide. It's got to be folded about four times so that it's only about 2 inches wide. And then you put that round your neck under your collar and then tie it at the V of your jumper. And it's all terribly complicated. And at first you wonder how you're going to get your uniform on. The trousers are so tight that you've got to wriggle into them. They're like the modern jeans. And it was all great fun, really. You really had great difficulty in dressing yourself at first. You had somebody to have somebody to help you.
And did the uniforms fit?
They fitted skin tight, let's put it like that. Most of us were reasonably slim. There weren't many oversized people in those days.
And did you have to put your names into everything?
Oh, yes, certainly. First of all, we were given like stencils, and we stenciled our name onto everything.
What were the stencils of? Were they just
I can't it's difficult to remember details like that now, I'm afraid.
What about your accommodation? Where were you staying?
Fairly comfortable wooden huts, long wooden huts, with reasonably comfortable beds.
Were they heated at all?
I remember we were pretty cold. If they were heated, they weren't heated sufficiently. The food was quite good.
What type of food were we getting?
We were getting three good meals a day, not badly cooked. Nothing much to complain about.
And you were all observers, were you, on this part?
Yes.
Were part of an observer course?
We were the 52nd observers course.
Where did everybody else come from?
All over the country. A lot of chaps who spoke very very well obviously came from good backgrounds.
Were there many people from a similar background to your own?
Oh, yes, very mixed. We were very, very mixed.
Well, hold it.